Hi everyone, this is Spencer Williams, co-host of the Art of Costume blogcast. The episode you're about to listen to was recorded in August 2021, just a few weeks before we learned of the sudden passing of actor Michael K. Williams. Michael was a brilliant actor and producer known for his work on The Wire, 12 Years a Slave, Boardwalk Empire, When They See Us, Lovecraft Country, and so many more. Not only were his roles in both film and television beyond compare, but Michael also leaves behind a legacy of pure kindness and selflessness that touched the lives of so many. Wire co-star Wendell Pierce said on social media, "An immensely talented man with the ability to give voice to the human condition, portraying the lives of those whose humanity is seldom elevated until he sings their truth." We send our utmost love to all of Michael's friends and family and all of those touched by the life of Michael K. Williams. Please join us in this moment of silence as we reflect upon the life of Michael and his contributions to the world. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. I'm not sure when that story came out, but it's giving me like real Princess Leia vibes.
Princess Leia's very of the time of the 1940s?
No.
Well, 50s? Pretty sure that was shot in like the 70s or 80s. I can't remember.
Now I have to look up when this book came out. 1912. Okay, well then now we have to back up because now I sound stupid.
No, 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 Spencer. Daniel, keep this all in.
And welcome to the Art of Costume blogcast. I'm Elizabeth Joy Glass.
And I am also Elizabeth Joy Glass.
No, you're not. Don't be an imposter. I can see you. That is my lovely co-host, Spencer Williams.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, Spencer. How's it going?
It's going good. I just want to say happy birthday. I know it's a little late, but
thank you.
This is your birthday episode.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Where's my horse?
It's coming.
Okay.
It's very hard to ship a live horse to Pennsylvania, but it's on its way.
Okay. That's all I care about.
How was your birthday?
It was good. I worked all day on my birthday.
Oh.
But then, like, my family did, it was like a Wednesday, so it's like you can't really do anything. But, like, that weekend I did stuff, and now I'm at my sister's pretending to be a farmer.
Oh.
So that's fun.
Doesn't mean you're playing Stardew Valley?
No, but I watched my sister take care of her goats and chickens. It's really cute. They have two baby chicks right now, so that's adorable. I helped her pick some fruits and vegetables. Then today, we pickled peppers, made two different kinds of jam.
Pickled peppers. Wow, that sounds like the best birthday ever. Explain to the audience your setup you got going on right now.
Yeah, so I'm in a closet. There was nowhere to put my microphone, so I'm currently holding it. And I may or may not lose electricity because there's a hurricane outside.
Ooh, that sounds so exciting.
So,
interesting episode today.
Yeah, lots of variables. But do you want to dive into our episode this week, Spencer?
I am so excited. I've been looking forward to this one for a long time. So what are we watching this week, Elizabeth?
This week, we watched Lovecraft Country.
Woo! I'm so excited.
This was wild.
Yeah. I mean, this
was so wild.
The show was straight up crazy, and I loved every second of it. It's one of my favorite shows of recent memory. I loved it that much. So I cannot wait to talk about it.
I had no idea really what it was going into it. I'd seen like all different sorts of things. Like at one point, I thought it was like an anthology series where like each episode was different. I quickly realized that wasn't the case. I was so confused, but I watched it and it's fantastic.
It's so fun. To me, I loved it so much because each episode felt like it could have been its own movie. You know, there were different elements and themes that made each episode unique, but all tied into one larger story. And it's just fun. It's artistic. It's terrifying. It had a lot to say. It was beautiful. I learned a lot from it. I learned a lot, and I'm excited to share some of the stories within it with everyone this week.
As am I. So do you want to give us a summary?
I sure will. Okay, so Lovecraft Country, for our summary, Atticus joins his friends, Letitia and Uncle George, to embark on a road trip across 1950s Jim Crow America in search of his missing father. This begins a struggle to survive and overcome both the racist terrors of white America and the terrifying monsters that could be ripped from a Lovecraft paperback. And that is my summary. Very short. Very vague.
And this is where, if you are worried about spoilers, you leave. We are not a spoiler-free zone. So please go watch Lovecraft Country and then come back to us to learn about these amazing costumes.
If anything, we have the most spoilers. So we pride ourselves on our spoilers.
Yeah, no, we tell you everything. Like, don't ever complain about our show being full of spoilers, because you get at least a 60-second to 2-minute spoiler warning. So, and it's very obvious right off the bat, yes, that we are telling you everything.
Well, let's do this.
Let's do it. Let's get spoily. I'm going to jump behind the wardrobe. Series creator and showrunner was Misha Green, and our wonderful costume designer was Dana Pink. So, she did such a phenomenal job, and looking at her notable work, I was like kind of shocked that like she did this kind of show. So you may know Dana's Pink work from Bad Boys for Life, Baywatch with Zac Efron and The Rock, Crazy Stupid Love, Bumblebee, which we should put on our list because that did have excellent costumes. Hot Tub Time Machine.
Yeah. Her work, especially after Lovecraft Country, really is kind of, it varies in a great way.
It does. Like, I was looking through and I was like, these are all comedies. Like, same job, no matter where it is. But I was just like surprised that she then did something as like dramatic and like sci-fi horror as Lovecraft Country is.
Yeah, I love early on in her career, she actually worked a lot with Jack Black and Tenacious D, too, which is brilliant. I have to send you a music video that's just absolutely genius.
Oh, that's hilarious. What is not hilarious is the costume she did for Lovecraft Country. Gorgeous, beautiful. So Lovecraft Country, the show, is based off a novel by Matt Ruff. And it's also a combination of short stories by author H.P. Lovecraft. It also references like famous literature such as Dracula, Princess of Mars, The Court of Monte Cristo. It was like, I was shocked by how all over the place it kind of was in terms of references, but she like keeps a very solid through line with the costumes, which I loved. She said in an interview with The Credits, "Misha gave me the amazing gift of letting me create without boundaries. We weren't held down by having to follow the exact rules of the period, so we were free to be front and center when we wanted to be without distracting from the action." With that little behind the wardrobe, we have a special surprise for you all. Spencer got to talk to friend of the blog and podcast, Dana Pink, and she gave us some really amazing behind the scenes facts that we are going to jump into right now. Here is Dana Pink.
Hi, it's Dana Pink. I'm the costume designer from Lovecraft Country. This show meant a lot to me. It was, first of all, super creative, and it was like nothing I'd ever done before because it wasn't just one genre. People say it's a horror show. I never thought I was making a horror show. There was just so many layers to it and so many eras and so many opportunities to be creative. So we just approached it like just one script at a time, one day at a time, one costume at a time. And we kind of just found our way through it. And it was super creative. I had an amazing experience working on it. And then watching it after was amazing because I can't believe how much we accomplished. I'm really proud of the show and I hope you guys like it.
Thank you.
everybody. We have a very special episode set up for you. Spencer, do you want to kind of break down, explain how we're going to do this week?
Yeah, so there is 100 million amazing costumes in this show, and also the plot could be a little complicated at times, so we figured this week we're going to change it up. Instead of summarizing each episode for you, you've already seen the show, you already know what happens, so we're going to just get right into it, talk about all of our favorite costumes, all of our favorite scenes and moments. We're just going to have a good conversation. I'm excited.
I'm excited too. So let's jump into this.
Yes.
Let's jump into this. We are going to start at episode one because the dream sequence it starts on is just, it's bonkers.
Yeah. I mean, we had to start with the very first scene because, I mean, yeah, it's pretty wild. When I saw the scene, I already knew that I was going to fall in love with this show because it was just so interesting and fun. What's going on here?
I know, because you go from like a World War II like battlefield to suddenly this red Martian woman is like floating out of the sky.
But then you have the giant alien monster that gets smashed in half by Jackie Robinson. So
I know. It's like, what is happening? What is going on? I was like, why is this beautiful red woman wearing like a metal bikini? What's happening?
So it's based off of the story, The Princess of Mars. I'm not sure when that story came out, but it's giving me like real Princess Leia vibes, like the slave Princess Leia costume.
Yes, definitely.
That feels very of the time.
Because it's metal, it's chained. Princess Leia is very of the time of the 1940s?
No.
Or 50s? Well,
no, I mean like...
Pretty sure that was shot in like the 70s or 80s. I can't remember.
I know, but I felt like it's very retro. Now I have to look up when this book came out. 1912.
The beginning of science fiction.
Okay, well then now we have to back up because now I sound stupid.
No, Spencer. No. Daniel, keep this all in.
The Princess of Mars came out in 1912. So when I said it's of the time, I meant like it felt very like a retro idea of what science fiction costuming would look like, which I felt like this look for this Martian woman feels very like it translated through time and turned into like the slave Princess Leia costume. That's what I was trying to say.
Yeah. Oh, very astute, Spencer.
Daniel, don't listen to Elizabeth.
Daniel, Lord Daniel White, I am the one you should be listening to, not Spencer.
Okay, so let's talk about one of my favorite scenes of the entire show. And it starts in episode one as well. And it is the fun block party. It's so colorful. It's so vibrant. It's so fun.
Yes, I agree. It's so much fun. You get to see a lot of that 1950s, right? 1950s? Mm-hmm. Why am I blanking on this? 1950s. A lot of the 1950s fashion. You get to see all of our main characters decked out in their best. Lots of extras. So it's a really exciting scene full of a lot to look at.
Oh, it's so beautiful. One of my favorite costumes of the entire show is that red Dior dress that Letty's wearing. Well, it's not Dior, but it's very inspired by a Dior.
It's very new look.
Yeah. Dana Pink told me that in her research, she was inspired by a Dior dress, which is what turned into Letty's red dress in a block party scene.
Yeah, this is gorgeous. It's super flattering on her. And it's perfect for when she gets up on stage with Ruby and starts singing her heart out. And Ruby is the, I think, even over Letty, she is the best looking person. Ooh. At this block party in that blue dress with the flower in her hair. So Ruby's dress, I love this one. Dana Pink was talking to Elle and she said, while Ruby's dress isn't necessarily designer, it's a beautiful fit. And she wanted her to like really shine, be the brightest person there because that's her personality. She is shiny and sexy, and she said, nobody wasn't looking at Ruby on stage. It was a combination of who she was in that dress and that dress. So she really made it so that everyone is looking at Ruby because she is the brightest person in this whole thing before things go a little bit awry for her.
Oh, yeah. I love the blue color that she's wearing. She just, like, glows in this sea of people. All eyes are on Ruby in this moment, just like Dana said in that interview. So stunning.
So stunning.
And I love the flower in her hair. That's like a signature Ruby look, the flower in the hair.
Yeah. Whenever she's singing, she's got that flower in her hair. And she really also just, like, with all the background characters, she really stands out. So does Letty, because she's got that bright red top. But even over Letty, like, that blue, because Letty has, like, the deep red top, the black skirt, and Ruby in that just sapphire blue, it's just like, I'm here. I'm the one you want.
Yeah. All eyes on me. I just love the scene because it's just so vibrant, and I love, like, the lighting design too, with, like, that purple glow that's on the crowd too. It's just so fun, so vibrant, such a great way to start off the show. And yeah, I love seeing all the costumes that Dana Pink did for the extras as well, all the background characters too. She's very detailed.
Yeah, she said they made most of the main characters. They made all of their stuff, especially because, you know, they get into a lot of bloody fights. And so, like, they needed multiples of stuff. And they're like, you can't go to a vintage place and get, like, five of the same thing. That's not possible. So main characters, pretty much everything was made. Background characters, they're like, we don't have time to do that, nor is it needed. So they were, like, going vintage shops, eBay. Everything was bought. And it looks so put together when you look at it all.
Yeah, it just all fits really perfectly together. So much fun. All right, moving on. Since we've talked about Letty a little bit, I think we should just dive into Letty's wardrobe as a whole. Because in my opinion, I think she has the best fits and fashions of the entire show.
She really does. She is the most put together, most fashionable person. Like, I see her as someone who definitely keeps up with trends and, like, making sure everything fits her. It's pretty much only in the second episode when she's dealing with all the ghosts in her house that, like, her fits get a little bit loose and a little bit messy because, you know, she's stressed out. Nobody wants to deal with ghosts in their home.
Yeah.
But throughout most of it, she is put together. Everything is fitted. She always looks current and, like, in fashion.
She loves to play dress up, you know, like, she's African-American people in the 1950s are going through a really dark time. And Letty's character is just really, I feel like she dresses up for herself and just to, like, it's her weapon, but also just, like, to feel good about who she is. And she just expresses herself through her clothing, through her fashion. It's just one of the ways that, like, shows her mood and shows how happy and colorful she's trying to be through this really dark time.
Definitely. And it shows that she's not afraid to be herself.
Yeah.
Through everything that's going on.
Well, the wonderful Dana Pink actually sent us a little audio clip talking about the incredible wardrobe design for Letty, played by Emmy Award nominee for lead actress this year, Journey Smollett. So let's take a little listen.
Working with Journey was amazing. First of all, she's so easy to dress that you could put her in anything and she looks good. So it isn't about what was going to look good. It was about what did we want to say and where were we going? And I love how she describes it, too. When she talks about it now, and I'm reading the things that she says, it's so beautiful that it was about dignity, how she dressed, that she was dressed up to sort of say something about herself. And it's really beautiful the way that she worded it. I don't know if I can do it justice, but it definitely was fashion and fun and sexy and all those things. But there was something very dignified about her character and her costumes. So part of that just organically happened because they were the things that, you know, you dress an actor and they look at themselves and we're both looking in the mirror at them. And either it's a yes or a no, you know, those moments where you're like, oh, that's Letty or oh, that's not Letty. I could literally go into a store today and pick out what Letty would choose to wear from modern clothes because she has a style. And what we created for her is a perspective. So everything that we did, although different in all different looks and different silhouettes, comes from one perspective and one eye. So I'm really proud of being able to work with Journey and create Letty in that way that was sexy and really modern for that time and dignified.
Ugh, I loved everything she said. I love the idea that Letty has a style, and even if she were to go shopping today, she would know exactly what Letty would be wearing. That's so cool.
I love that. That tells you she really took time to, like, get to know the characters, to put the best wardrobe together for them.
Totally. One of my favorite costumes that Letty wears is her equestrian outfit in episode 2.
I love that.
It's so good. I love the red vest with that textile underneath. Oh, it looks so good.
It's so good. And it's like, that goes back to what Dana Pink was saying about her style. It's her style. Because, like, while that may not have been, like, the look of the 1950s, it still looks incredible on her because she knows how to put herself together.
Totally. I mean, Letty knows how to put a look together. I love it so much. But then also, like you mentioned earlier, when she's going through dark times as well, it's like the color leaves Letty's costume as a whole. For example, in episode 3, like you mentioned, in the basement where she's wearing like dark gray, brown colors, zero color at all.
Yeah. I love that episode because right from the beginning, you can kind of tell while she's excited, she's kind of wary because when she shows Ruby the house at first, she is wearing like just khaki pants and like a black top. So like she's still very put together, looks great, but it's like she already knows something's going a little bit wrong. And then just throughout the episode, with the exception of the fringe dress, she just kind of gets like her tops and stuff get a little bit looser, a little darker. She ends up wearing a lot of like brownish colors in this episode.
Yes. Speaking of Ruby, I think we need to talk about Ruby's costumes a little bit because Ruby also has equally of amazing wardrobe.
Yes. So I loved Ruby. I feel like Ruby was my favorite character.
I knew you were going to say that. I could see that happening.
Because she has like, I feel like she has the best arc, just trying to be herself, trying to make it in this world that is not super accepting of her, to being thrown into this wild world of magic and death and just craziness. And then in the end, really accepting like herself and her sister. And while it ends poorly for her, she really understands what's important to her by the end of it.
Yeah, Ruby goes through some wild in this show. I mean, props to Wunmi Masaku, who plays Ruby, because she was dealt a interesting character to play who goes through a lot of interesting episodes. So luckily for us, Wunmi Masaku will actually be appearing in Loki, which we'll be talking about maybe a little later. Maybe eyebrows.
Yeah, I guess everybody will have to wait and see.
Yeah. So let's talk about her costumes. I love all of Ruby's costumes. It's hard for me to pick one. I think one of my favorite costumes had to be that red dress that she wears to the housewarming party. I love the red color on her. I love the flowers in her hair. She just always feels very sophisticated, very classy. She has that singer persona that's,
yes,
I think, represents her in her costumes. I love that housewarming red dress.
I love that, too, because it has the same energy of that blue dress we first see her performing in. It's all eyes on me. Look at me. Look at the flower in my hair. And that dress is, she wears that silhouette a lot. It's super flattering to her. Like her sister, she's very conscious of how she looks and how she presents herself, but she's not quite as fashion forward as her sister. And one of the things they did, especially with Ruby, is because she does not make a lot of money. She's a singer. She doesn't have a lot. So one thing that was really important was kind of looking back at the time and how people who didn't have as much money did dress themselves and, you know, use what they had over and over again. So they really wanted her to look like someone who reworks her clothes, mends her clothes, make sure they look good. But she's been using these dresses for years and years and years. So Dana Pink, in an interview with Elle, she was kind of talking about this. She says this about when Ruby's going to the department store to try and get a job on the floor. She's looking for a job.
So even the dress she's wearing to apply for that job wasn't brand new. It's something that looks amazing on her because she has a great eye, but she's worn this dress 50 times before. And I think that's part of it, to go to these clothes as they belong to the character. They've worn them and loved them. So I feel like that quote from her that she gave to Elle is really sums up kind of where she came from with Ruby's look. It's like, it's fantastic. It looks incredible on her, but it's aged.
Yeah, I love that. It's like, this is her interview dress. You know, she knows she's going to a department store today. She's probably worn this to other department stores. That's the interview dress.
Yeah, that's her interview dress. That's probably her interview hat, because she knows it looks perfect with the dress.
And Ruby looks good in a hat. The hats in this show are just something else.
She really wears a hat very well.
And then another costume I think is interesting is the sparkly pink dress that she wears to like a dive bar performance.
Yeah.
It very much reminds me of like Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. It's like very hot in there. She's kind of sweating a little bit. You could tell it's like not a good night, but she's just powering through. It's just like, you know, she kind of just threw this on and was like, let's go. It's going to be one of those nights, because she's really down in the dumps.
Well, I feel like it goes back to that quote of, like, Ruby is just a very bright person, and the clothes she wears when she's performing kind of, like, reflects that. But at this point, she's, like, upset with her sister. She knows something's not right. She's, like, she doesn't want to be there. So she probably put something on that she knew she felt good in, that she knew reflected that, like, brightness within her. But even that isn't, like, fixing her problems. It's like when you feel bad and you're like, oh, look good, even though you feel your worst sort of situation. And it's not helping her right now.
We're all just doing our best, okay? We're doing the best we can.
We're all just doing our best.
So moving on, we kind of talked about this a little bit earlier, and I kind of feel like you just want to move on from this topic, but I don't. I want to talk about all the horror that happens in this show.
It's the ghosties.
I am, you guys can't see it, but I'm currently holding up multiple pictures of all the scary ghosts from this show, making Elizabeth uncomfortable. Don't hide behind your blanket. We're recording a podcast.
I need my blankie to deal with this.
I'm a big horror fan, so I love this part. I love episode 3 and I love episode 8. They're terrifying. I told Dana Pink recently, you know, it's this is one of those shows I like to watch when I'm like doing something in the background. Maybe when I go to bed at night, lay in bed, watch Lovecraft Country or Veep or whatever's on HBO Max. But I will not watch episode 3 or 8 when I'm in bed because it's so scary. One of my worst fears is a ghost ripping the blankets off of my bed.
And it's like, it's not just a ghost ripping the blankets off. It's a ghost ripping the blankets off, and then you see her eyes, and you're like, oh, that's creepy. And then you see the rest of her face, and it's like, oh my, what happened?
Yeah, she's crouched over by the bed. It's horrifying.
It's horrifying. Her clothes are dusty. Like, I feel like ghosts, a lot of times, it's like, they just like, oh, they look like how they, like, when they died. And it's like, the clothes are usually pretty, like, okay, unless they died super gruesomely. And her clothes just, like, look like they've aged along with the ghost, if you know what I mean.
That's an interesting point. Well, my idea behind it is a lot of these stories in the show are based off of historical events, which is what we'll talk about later. But there's tons and tons of story of African Americans being experimented on, which is horrific and terrible. And, you know, I've done a little bit of research on how episode 3 in particular is inspired by a lot of these horrific American events. So I'm wondering if, you know, the ghosts in this episode represent characters who maybe were like trapped in the house for a while before they were actually murdered, which might explain why their costumes are so decayed, because maybe they were like that at the time of their death. I think that's might have what happened. But it goes to say, though, that the agers and dyers on this show are legendary.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. They got put through a lot.
Yeah. We have a quote, actually, from Dana Pink. She said this to me when I interviewed her early this year, she said, "We designed outfits because we knew that they were going to get very bloody, as in they built it, a lot of these costumes. For example, Letty's cream-colored outfit in episode 1 and 2, we knew that was going to be covered in blood, so we thought about where it's going to end up and how bloody it's going to be. This is also the time to think about multiples. That's another reason why you have to make everything. You can't go to a vintage store and say, oh, I need 8 of that shirt. That doesn't exist. So we had to make everything, and we had to make multiples of everything because of all of the blood." I mean, talking about a crazy job.
I know. And like that outfit of Letty's, it's so cute to start out, and then it's just, they make it look so disgusting.
Yeah, it looks like an entire different costume.
Yeah.
After it's covered in blood.
It makes it look so disgusting. And another place where I feel like they kind of do the opposite, it looks, there's a costume that looks disgusting and then it looks really good, is Yahima. Because at first they're like this, just like mummy. And then they like reanimate, and it's like, yes, her clothes are like older, but they're not like gross and disgusting like when she was a mummy.
It's pretty terrible, very horrifying. But yeah, the first time you see them, it's wearing this really gruesome looking cloth. Then Yahima reanimates.
Yeah.
I don't even want to talk about the basketball player with the baby head.
I do not want to talk about that either. I don't know why you put it on here.
I really just put these scary pictures on this slide just to scare you.
That was the most disturbing one to me. That was the most disturbing one to me. That was the most disturbing thing in this. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I actually want to up you on that. I think the most disturbing.
Okay, this is a close second.
I think the most disturbing characters were Topsy and Bopsy, who appeared in episode 8. The two young dancer girls who scared the f***ing life out of me. They're terrifying.
Yeah, they were awful. They were scary. I think what was scary about them wasn't like how creepy and crazy they looked, but was how they were like chasing her, but like taking their time chasing her so that they could do all these like creepy movements.
Yeah, it's horrible because they... That's why I love like zombie movies too, where the zombies move slowly, because when people move just fast enough to like keep you moving, but also slow enough where you're like, you're able to run into the house and grab something. That's what Topsy and Bopsy were doing. You could always see them in the background, which made it 100 times more scarier. Topsy and Bopsy are based off of a harmful stereotype. In a conversation I had with Dana Pink, she said that she made the costumes for Topsy and Bopsy. They were actually made out of silk.
What? Really?
Yeah. Even though she said that they look like potato sacks, it was actually beautiful silk that she printed on.
Oh my gosh. Which
I can't even tell. It does look like potato sacks.
They do look like potato sacks, which is actually kind of funny because I think it's around like the Depression era. There were actually like flour and like companies where they would put patterns on their like sacks of product for people to like make dresses out of, because everyone was so poor.
Oh my gosh.
It was like, and it was mostly children's clothing. That's so interesting.
That's interesting. I never heard that before. But yeah, Topsy and Bopsy are just terrifying. The makeup department and the hair department really killed it with these two characters also. I am just like almost ready to just go to break, so I don't even have to look at these scary images anymore.
I think this is the perfect point for a break. We can get some tea, recenter ourselves, and come back.
I'm going to watch like a happy cartoon just to put myself in a happier mood because I'm scared now.
Watch some cat videos.
Okay, let's take a break.
Sir, are you ready to get into some more Letty costumes?
Oh, I'm so ready. I'm so glad we're done talking about Ghost.
Actually, the Letty costume.
The Letty costume. This is definitely my favorite costume of the entire series.
This is her moment.
This is the moment. So we are talking about Letty's fringe dress from episode 3 when she runs out of her housewarming party with her baseball bat and smashes up some white supremacist cars.
Yeah. Yeah, she does.
That's some good shit right there. I love this dress so much, but before we talk about it, I think we're going to let Dana Pink talk to you about her fringe dress first.
Please.
3 was amazing. In 3, Letty buys the house and all kinds of crazy stuff starts happening in the house. And then specifically the dress that she wears when she has the housewarming party and then she goes outside with the baseball bat. When we were designing that dress, we had to think about what was she going to do, because part of what you do when you're designing is think about their action, where they're going to be, you know, what they have to do. She not only was dancing, she went into the bathroom with Atticus, sitting on the sink. Then she walks, storms out with a baseball bat and is swinging the bat at the car. And then she gets arrested. So she's down on her knees. So there was a lot of action. So you couldn't just give her a tight little dress or something. You know, if she had sat down with a big circle skirt, then that would have, you know, ridden up and that wouldn't have worked either. So there were a lot of things that we had to work out about that dress. But immediately when I read that script, I knew I wanted to do fringe because I wanted that dress to kind of have a life of its own and have something to say for itself. I wanted it. I just kept seeing it in slow motion. To me, for some reason, I just kept seeing her walking down a sidewalk and she's walking and the fringe is kind of moving like an exclamation point to every step she takes. And so that was my motivation and my vision for that dress. And it worked out really beautifully. We made several versions of it, but that was the one that we landed on. And I really love her in that dress. I love how it made her feel. I love what it looked like. I loved it under the lights. And it also, we didn't do a crazy bright color. You know, it was dark out and we could have made that the only thing you saw, but it's not. You know, it was bright enough, but it didn't take away from anything else that was happening.
I just love what she had to say about this dress. It's just so beautiful. And I love the color.
It's beautiful. I love the color. That's a really good color for her. And I love, she didn't mention this, but I love when she's breaking the windows and, you know, just going crazy with the baseball bat. The lining of her skirt is red. Oh, you can see how furious she is and how much she's just going at it. And just that little bit of red to reflect how angry she is.
The fury.
Even though it's so subtle. I love it.
It's such a good note. I'm so glad you brought that up. Yeah, you see like the red lining poking through right as she's smashing into the windows. It's so... I love the fringe on this. There's so much movement to it as she's smashing the windows. I mean, it's genius. This is a genius costume. One of my favorite costumes we've seen on this podcast so far, honestly.
I agree. Like you said, I love the fringe as well. Just because like it is such a fun element to clothing. But when she's going at it, they're whipping around her. And just all the movement it creates. So beautiful.
I like what Dana said, too. Like, she had to think about this almost, you know, a good part of this episode takes place at the housewarming party. And Letty goes into the bathroom and she's running outside and she's dancing. There's a lot of movement that happens. So what can you do to the skirt to that's flexible enough for her to do all these activities? And the answer is fringe.
The answer is fringe. Yeah.
I mean, it's genius. That is some amazing thinking. I'm just, I love Dana Pink. I'm just so impressed by her every time I watch the show.
She really thinks of everything and it just never ends.
It just never ends. So, speaking of never ends, there was an episode in this show that really blew me away because all of a sudden it was like she costumed in a whole entire different show. And that is episode 6, Meet Me in Daegu, takes place entirely in South Korea.
I know. I was so blown away by this because it's like a flashback and like a flashback of a couple years to the Korean War. But it's funny because like it's not that far in the past. So it's like it still has like a similar look, but it's like it's an entire different country. So there's all the Korean influence and culture. There's that just couple years. There's the fact that a war is going on, so not everything is available to them. It's really just a crazy turn of events.
Oh, I love the actress who plays Gia. Her name is Jamie Chung, and she is so stunning. And every costume she wears, I just like absolutely fall in love every single time. My favorite costume has to be the pink coat that she's wearing throughout this episode. That's a good coat.
It really is. Like, it conveys a lot for her character, especially because she's a very, despite everything that's going on in her life, she's a very hopeful person. And I feel like that just kind of dusty, but like still cheery pink reflects that. I love personally all of her nursing uniforms because I love how nurses' uniforms have evolved over the years. And this is like a very iconic time period for nursing uniforms. But also, like, you can tell she takes a lot of pains to look good at her job, not just because it was expected at the time, but she's trying to build a life for herself outside of what her mother expects her to do, which is, like, fulfill her quota of men for this spirit that's inhabiting her, and then get married. Like, she wants more out of her life than, like, having kids and a husband.
Yeah, it's insane. I never heard of the folktale that inspired this episode, the Kumio, which is a nine-tailed fox spirit that takes the form of a human woman. It's very Korean in origin, but also there's versions of it in Chinese and Japanese culture as well. Terrifying, but actually kind of beautiful too at the same time, at least portrayed through this show. I love this episode. And Dana Pink told me in an interview, she loved dressing Jamie Chung. She loved this episode. She thought it was very beautiful. She said to me, "We definitely took a little liberty there. We did have somebody there who was guiding us through what was traditional and what wasn't traditional. There were things that we knew that were not traditional, but they were all in the spirit of what they did for the period and the setting. We took some liberties with the pants and similar things. We wanted to create in the same way something grounded and based in the period, grounded in something that was our own as well. And so that's what we did. I think that was one of the most beautiful episodes. I really do. I think this is one of my favorite episodes too. It was unexpected, but once you watched it, you were glad it happened."
Yeah, it really was unexpected, but it really fills in the story and adds really beautiful element to it.
And also, she had to create all these military uniforms for all the men in this episode, too. Atticus is heavily featured in this show, and we're seeing him in a whole different kind of character costuming, really.
Oh, yeah. Atticus is very different in this episode because he's not the Atticus we've all come to know and love. This is military Atticus who will do not great things if he's told to.
Yeah, I mean, that's an understatement. You know, this is something we haven't really talked about yet. You know, we've been talking about Lovecraft Country now between you and I for like a week. But yeah, I love Atticus as a character, and I love the stories they tell through the show about the characters because they're all heavily flawed. You know, like Atticus is a heavily flawed person. So is a lot of the characters in this show, especially Montrose. And I just love how, you know, Atticus is supposedly the hero, but it's still realistic in the nature of the show and a historical accuracy where, you know, he's a flawed person and he did terrible things in war and he was brutal and he was homophobic in that way too. Like, there was a lot of things about him that made him what we would consider an anti-hero, which is why I like this show, because it was just very real in the storytelling.
Yeah. Yeah. Nobody's perfect. Everyone does horrible things in their past, but he grows from it. Everyone this show grows and realizes, like, I have to be a better person to make a better world.
And then another costume we have to point out from this episode was the shaman in the, like, snowy mountains, which feels so nice and peaceful. I love that costume. It's so graceful.
That was a beautifully shot scene.
Yeah, it was so fun to watch. Ugh, I love it. It has like, it looks like fox fur on it. I love the hat. I love the drape of the costume.
It's beautiful. And she could have very easily just like blended in to the rest of the scenery. But like with those kind of like beige accents and then the kind of shawl she's wearing with the little rosebuds on it. I love that because then it picks up on those blossoming trees. So it's like those little things help her really pop.
So there's another character that we need to talk about that we haven't really mentioned yet, but I think she's kind of one of the fashion queens of the show, which would be
about somebody who pops.
Yeah. Christina Braithwaite. Every time you see her on screen, I think she really captures it. Unless Letty's in a scene, which they don't have a lot of scenes together, but Christina really captures the camera every time she's in an episode.
Because she has that money.
Yeah. Yeah, she do.
In an interview with the credits, Dana Pink said, "I really wanted the audience to want to touch our heroes. Their pieces were pretty much exclusively textured and filled with movement. The villains' pieces were less inviting, crisper, sharper edged. They were meant to be observed and not necessarily touched. Christina's dresses and hats had much harder edge than those of Letty or Ruby." And that's so true for Christina. Like, even the patterns are very geometric. Like, she's not wearing any fringe.
Yeah, that's such a good point. Because all of Christina's costumes look like they could be in a museum somewhere. They're very just, like, sharp, sophisticated. You know, they're probably very expensive. She's doesn't want them to be touched. She's definitely not going to be wearing these costumes to any block parties where they could possibly, you know, get dirty. They're very well kept.
Yeah, she is like, she's getting her clothes straight from the couturier, like straight off the runway. She's not, I don't know if you ever really see her wear the same thing twice.
I don't think so.
She's the height of fashion and it is cold.
Yes. And also, Christina knows how to wear a hat. I love Christina's hat. Specifically, one episode, she's wearing like a black hat. And it's just, it's not really a functional hat because there's lots of holes in it. But it's still...
None of the hats in this are functional.
Yeah. But they're super fun to look at.
Oh, gosh. That's something we've lost in society. Non-functional, good-looking hats. We should bring those back.
Let's do it.
Let's bring those back, Spencer.
Oh, gosh. Well, anyways, another costume I want to point out before we move on. Christina wears this black and gold robe toward the end of the show. It's kind of like a flowy, maybe it's a caftan, can't really tell, but it's absolutely stunning. Black and gold on her is crazy good.
Yeah, I love that one. And especially when she's like, I mean, she's crazy throughout the whole thing because it's like, why are you trying to sacrifice your cousin for immortality? Question mark. I was very confused. I was like, okay, whatever. So it really just shows like how determined she's getting.
Yeah, I like Christina because she's, you know, she's a villain, but she's not like evil in a sense where she's trying to hurt everyone. She's very much like, I need to do what I need to do to reach my end goal. Like, yeah, I'll help you with Diana. You know, I'm not here to kill all you guys. I really just want what I want, and then I'll leave you alone, which is an interesting type of villain.
Yeah. And it's like, because she like, helps them financially, helps them, like, protect themselves a little bit. But she's like, yeah, no, I'll help you. I just need Atticus dead at the end of the day.
Yeah. You know, we have 10 episodes to enjoy each other, but by the last episode, I need Atticus dead. She even buys Letty a house. Granted, it comes with a couple of problems, which we mentioned earlier. But, you know, it's an interesting type of villain. So another thing that I think is really interesting that we should mention is the historical accuracies that Dana Pink had to recreate in this show. There's all sorts of different elements in this show that you might not have noticed because they're very subtle, but they're also very realistic. For example, there's a shot in the show. It perfectly represents Gordon Park's department store photograph, which is so famous now. It's a sign that says colored entrance, and there's a woman and a young girl. And Dana Pink almost to the T recreated that photo. And if you're not paying attention, you might miss it. But that's just how subtle and sophisticated her costuming was.
Like we said earlier, she wasn't afraid to go out of period with the characters if it meant getting, you know, the story across, a feeling across. However, with these historical parts, she wanted nothing but
accuracy. She was very concerned with getting things historically accurate where it mattered.
Yes, 100%. Especially, for example, in episode 8, they recreate Emmett Till's funeral, which is a horrible, tragic story that I implore you all to please Google, because I honestly did not have a lot of background information on the murder of Emmett Till, you know, until recent years, and especially watching this show. It really forced me to kind of Google this and get myself educated. And Emmett Till's funeral is known for being very, very hot. You know, so when she was costuming this funeral, it just felt so real, and it felt so, you know, just straight to what happened on that day. And Dana Pink knew when it was important to just exactly, you know, replicate what happened without adding her fun fantasy sci-fi, you know, twist to the costumes.
Yeah, no, she knew when and where to add that and where to just keep it very accurate.
There's also some fun moments in terms of the historical accuracy. Like we mentioned earlier, when she recreated Jackie Robinson's baseball uniform.
Yeah.
You know, just like little things like that are super fun. But then, of course, we have like the Tulsa Race Massacre, which happens in episode 9, which, you know, this is interesting, too, because the Tulsa Race Massacre happened in 1921. So this is a way jump in period from the 1950s to the 20s.
I agree. This is the episode where she really stayed accurate. I'm like, with the exception of like Letty's shoes, but that's a story point. Everything is very historically accurate.
Yeah. I mean, Letty's wearing like a really nice red, kind of very flapper-esque actually, which is really beautiful. And the jewelry on Letty too is just so to the period, and I love it.
Even the grandmother she ends up speaking to, it was very common during this period for like older women to kind of like hold on to like the fashion of when they were a little bit younger. And you can see the like turn of the century kind of like Edwardian style in her. So that really shows you like her attention to detail.
Yes, so much so. A very tragic episode, but also just beautiful to watch as she really, her and all the other departments on Lovecraft Country, they really create some really beautiful episodes in this show. And I love it so much because it's a perfect blend of very serious history that we need to talk about, but then also some really fun, crazy, interesting stories like we're about to talk about with one of my favorite episodes, episode 7, I Am, which to me is one of the most fun episodes of TV ever.
It is. And how's it being honored?
It's being honored. Dana Pink was nominated for her Emmy this year because of this episode. This is what they submitted, and she has an Emmy nominee for this. And I honestly, I have to say it here, I hope an Emmy win. I think Dana Pink deserves it for this episode alone, not taking into consideration the entire show.
I agree. She spans so many different decades, cultures, pure sci-fi. What she accomplishes in one episode is insane.
Yeah, let's try to break it down a little bit. I mean, it starts with this very science fiction Beyonce character. I love the armor that she's wearing. It's very colorful with like neon, like LED lights in it. The armor is stunning. The hair styling is perfect. I love it so much.
Yeah, it's very modern sci-fi.
It's like the modern idea of what fantasy sci-fi into the future looks like, which is different, actually, when we get a little bit further into this episode. It's almost like a retro idea of what fantasy sci-fi is. But my favorite scene is when my favorite character, you mentioned earlier your favorite character is Ruby. My favorite character is Hippolyta, played by Anjanue Ellis. She was nominated for an award as well, and I think she deserves it for this episode. It's very emotional and just very beautiful acting. But I love when she's transported to Paris and she's forced to dance with Josephine Baker, which is what she wanted. But I don't think that's not what she thought was going to happen.
It's wild. I love it because she's instantly transported into this, just those like crazy showgirl outfits
it's that so beautiful. They would
wear. And it's like, oh, you go from like a jumpsuit to this.
Yeah, she's transported into 1920s France. She's dancing with Josephine Baker, which I am a huge Josephine Baker fan. fan. I am such a Josephine Baker nerd. For those of you that don't know, she's an American-born French entertainer. She's also a French resistance agent and later on became a civil rights activist as well here in the United States. You could find her music on Spotify still if you like. So maybe after this, start listening to some Josephine Baker. So I love that Dana Pink had not only to create these beautiful dance costumes, but she had to recreate Josephine Baker, which is a huge task. Frida Kahlo even makes a little bit of an appearance. Like, what's going on here?
I missed that.
You didn't realize that was Frida Kahlo?
What did I miss?
Frida Kahlo is just hanging out backstage with Josephine Baker and Hippolyta.
I gotta watch that again. Okay.
Do you know what? Let's just let Dana Pink tell us about this episode before we go any further.
Sounds great.
Episode 7 is called I Am, and it covers so many different time periods, so many different looks, so many different sort of creative opportunities for us. And I just literally remember reading the script for that episode and being so excited because all of a sudden, one page, it's Josephine Baker, it's Paris, we're doing dancers. And my assistant was sitting across the room and I kept saying, oh my God, you're not going to believe this. You're not going to believe this. You know, now they're warriors. Now they're different warriors. Now they're in space. So it was so exciting to read what we were about to do. And then we just slowly, one by one, started taking on those challenges. And most of it was made in our own office space. Most of it was made, you know, in our building. So we watched it go from nothing to something. We watched leather pieces coming in and get molded and put together. And we kept ordering different feathers, which are the right feathers to cover the tops. And so we just like one by one made all those costumes. And it was a crazy whirlwind, that episode. And working with Ingenue was amazing. She was so open and so supportive of what we wanted to do. She just came in. She kept saying we're partners. And it was such an honor to be able to help create that with her and help take her on that journey. And that was probably my favorite episode to do, although I literally, it's like children, what's your favorite? You can't have a favorite of them all. But 107 was everywhere and probably the most creative for us.
Oh, my goodness. I love what she said about them being able to just be super creative on this, and it shows. It really shows.
Yeah, I love the fact that she and Ingenue were partners in this too. You know, this was a groundbreaking episode for both of them, so they really put their all into this episode, and it shows. It's stunning. I love when now she leaves France and now she goes to the kingdom of Dohemi, and now she's Hippolyta is a warrior now.
Yeah. She has a crash course in how to be a warrior.
Yeah, she picks up on it pretty quickly. I love these costumes. It reminds me of like my favorite costumes from Black Panther done by Ruth Carter as well. Because you see the very traditional cowrie beading, all the shells. So stunning.
It's so much brighter than where we just were in France. And you're like, oh. Like, it gives you a little jolt. You're like, oh, okay, we're here now.
Dana actually told me in an interview we did before that the queen that you see sitting in that throne, she has that huge shell necklace, if you remember.
Yeah.
That necklace, she actually found at, like, in an antique store hanging on a wall.
Oh, my gosh.
And she was with her assistant or something, and she was like, oh, that's the necklace. And her team was kind of looking at her like, okay. And she bought it, and it worked perfectly. I love it.
I love that. I love that her vision of just like, oh, I can take this and this and make this incredible look that conveys exactly what it needs to.
It's so stunning. Also, Sue from Veep is in this episode. I know you don't watch Veep, but she plays the warrior that's training Hippolyta, and it's just a fun moment for me.
She's in Veep?
Yeah.
She's scary. Yeah,
you know. And she's also scary in Veep, but that's because she's a badass in Veep who handles the president's schedule.
Oh.
She's a warrior of the schedule, and now she's a warrior of the kingdom of Dohemi.
I love that for her.
But the episode's not over yet, because now Hippolyta's being transported to space with Uncle George, who I missed much. I'm so glad that he's back.
I know. This was so sweet. And, like, they're getting to experience their daughter's, like, comic book. I love it.
Yeah, it was so pretty, so beautiful. I love the colors. The little aliens were funny with the little helmets on.
I know, and the little oxygen tanks.
It was so cute. Hippolyta has this really cool planetarium cage built around her, the skirt. It's so pretty.
I love this because it's like, you know, at the beginning, the woman who like lets her enter into all this is very modern sci-fi. This is very retro sci-fi, very of the 1950s. So I just love that contrast.
Yeah, it feels very like Jetsons type sci-fi. The colors, the vinyl, it's all so pretty. And I also love that planetarium skirt. It feels very like a science project almost.
Yeah. that looks like something I would have done in high school, which I love because her daughter is probably like high school age.
Yeah. So, I mean, her daughter created the comic book. So that's why it feels very young and childish, but also retro and fun and colorful. Because, you know, this is actually in the 1950s. This was their idea of what science fiction, what the future would look like. So there's so much detailing into how Dana Pink translated these scenes through costumes, thinking about how the characters would think of the period.
Yeah, I love that. She just knocks it out of the park, and I'm so glad she got an Emmy nomination, because just the work she put into this, she deserves it.
Yeah, I 100% agree. That brings us to end of Lovecraft Country.
Watch it. It's intense. It's fun. It's not what you expect.
And no, you have to get past. A lot of people watch the first episode and they're kind of like, whoa, what's happening here? Please just keep watching it. It's so, so, so fun. I love it so much. This is one of my favorite shows of the year, for sure.
Yeah, it really is a good one. Despite the drama and the seriousness of some of the topics they choose, it really is fun. Like, it's a fun show.
It's just so creative. Unfortunately, it's not coming back for season two, which, you know, at parts I'm like upset about. But then also I feel like I feel like Lovecraft Country's ending on a good note. I felt like I got what I needed from the finale to know, you know, how their stories end. As much as I wish it's coming back for season two, I'm fine with it. You know, it's a beautiful memory now. I love the show, so.
Same. When Christina didn't die right away, I was like, okay, of course this is coming back. But then when she is killed, I was like, okay, like there's no loose ends. Like,
yeah.
You know, Letty and Hippolyta are like gonna go change the world, and that baby's gonna be a part of it, and they're gonna go out and dominate, and that's the end of the story.
For those of you that want to talk more about Lovecraft Country, I implore you all to please listen to this podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It's called Lovecraft Country Radio. It's the official HBO podcast hosted by Ashley C. Ford and one of the Lovecraft Country writers, Shannon Houston. I listened to this podcast back when I was watching the show, and they really talk, they break down each episode individually, and they talk about all of the historical significance, all of the themes, all of the deeper meanings behind the show. And I just think that everyone should really listen to it. It was really beautiful and I loved it so much. So yeah, that's Lovecraft Country.
I loved it. I'm so glad you made me watch this.
A little bit different than Emma and Clueless.
A little different. We definitely took a turn this week. Spencer, are you ready for another turn?
I'm ready.
We are going to watch what I'm sure will be images we are all familiar with after this Halloween. We are watching Suicide Squad 2021.
Yes. I love this movie so much. It was so good.
Yeah. We've already seen it, everybody. We've already seen it. It's so good.
We saw it like as soon as it came out, even though we knew we weren't recording for a while. The day it came out, we're watching it.
Yeah, we watched it. It's twists, it's turns, It's giant monsters and anti-heroes. It's everything you want.
And so many fun, different costumes that I'm excited to explore with you all.
Me too. If you're as excited as us to explore this, please follow us on Instagram. Give us a like. Yeah, share us with a friend. Share the excitement. We'll see you all next week.
See you all next week. Thanks for listening.
The Art of Costume Blogcast is hosted by Elizabeth Joy Glass and Spencer Williams.
Produced by Elizabeth Joy Glass with associate producer Spencer Williams.
Our sound design and engineering is done by Daniel White.
Follow us on Instagram at The Art of Costume Pod.
Or visit theartofcostumeblogcast.com for all blogcast updates.
For more costume reviews, deep dives, and interviews, visit theartofcostume.com.
A blog dedicated to highlighting the best in costume design.